All right, let's get started with this.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number five.
It was the first White House briefing in a month. They only do them once a month now, because they tend not to go well. Remember the last time that they actually took questions wasn't even in the briefing room. They damn near arrested the CNN reporter.
Right. Well, I know the new rules are in place now where you're not allowed to ask a follow-up question. So all the reporters today were asking like run-on sentence question after question after question after question.
Right.
And to get around the no follow-up question rule.
So Sarah Sanders handed over the podium to Larry Kudlow. I love Larry Kudlow.
He's very nice suits.
Nice suit. Great guy. I've known him a long time. He's a really, he's the kind of guy you'd love to go have a martini with and discuss the markets. You know, that's the kind of thing. How he ended up doing this, I have no idea. But I think a lot of the guys are standing around the White House looking at each other going, well, the president did ask me, so I guess I got to do
I'm
it.
Here.
So Kudlow was up there, and he was trying, and you know, Kudlow's a longtime television guy, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he handled himself really well up there, but all of a sudden the questions started getting kind of, you know, tougher and tougher
mm-hmm.
about, especially about the way the president is treating GM and then somehow it turned towards Saudi Arabia, and Kudlow was like, I'm out of here.
Earlier, you mentioned low oil and gas prices as evidence that the president's economic policy is working. You mentioned the U.S. becoming the global dominant
yes.
energy player. But nearly days ago, the president said that it was necessary to let Saudi Arabia and its crown prince get away with ordering the murder of a Washington Post journalist because Saudi Arabia ensures low gas prices. Now, which one is it, sir?
I'm going to let Ambassador Bolton handle that question. I'm trying so hard to swim in my own lane, and I think John will help out.
Did he just say pass? Are you allowed to do that?
That's what he did.
Pass.
Yeah. Well, so then John Bolton got up there.
Is it true the White House is blocking Gina Haspel from speaking to senators about that audio television on Wednesday?
So let me take the question of the tape first. No, I haven't listened to it. And I guess I should ask you, why do you think I should? What do you think I'll learn from it?
Well, you're the National Security Advisor. You might have access to that sort of intelligence.
Yeah. How many in this room speak Arabic?
You have access to an interpreter?
Well, you want me to listen to it? What am I going to learn from? I mean, if they were speaking Korean, I wouldn't learn any more from it either.
An interpreter would be able to tell you what's
going
on. Well,
then I can read a transcript, too.
You know, I got to say,
mm-hmm.
The empathy gene is what is now no longer in existence in the White House. You know, like for years and years and years, administrations at least feigned empathy. And I believe that the efficiency of this organization here, the Trump organization, they don't have time for that. We're not going to touchy-feely and talk about our feelings. That's not what real men do. No. The question was, why haven't you listened to the Khashoggi tape? If you had the tape of the killing of Jamal Khashoggi,
mm-hmm.
have you listened to it? He said, no, he hasn't listened to it, and it's in Arabic. And his thing is, it's in Arabic. What am I going to learn from it?
Well, he says also, to be fair, that he feels that he knows now, after talking with, being briefed by the intelligence community, he has a feeling of exactly what's on that tape
uh-huh.
and what exactly happened.
Right. And I suppose it is a bit of a, there may be a challenged equivalency there in terms of wanting to do something about it and having to hear the tape before you want to do something about
mm-hmm.
it. But the problem is that they don't want to do anything about it. That's the issue.
Right.
They don't want to do anything about it. They haven't listened to the tape. Would the tape spur them, the emotionalism of listening to a man being murdered?
Mm-hmm.
For his political beliefs, for asking questions of a dictatorial regime in Saudi Arabia, would that spur you to be a little bit more connected to the emotions of it, and then want to be? Would you be provoked into doing something?
Mm-hmm.
And does the United States want to be provoked by emotion? No, I understand that, but there's a better way to answer that question.
There is.
Than what? Wait, do you speak Arabic? I mean, it's a constant push you back. It's a reasonable question, and he can explain it by saying, listen, I don't speak the language. Not do you speak Arabic, but I don't speak the language. and it wouldn't really help me to do it. I've read the transcript. I know what happened. But then he'd have to answer this question, which would be, what are you going to do about it? And he'd have to say nothing.
Right.
Okay. So you don't think it's important to hear that as a national security advisor?
I'm just trying to make the point that everybody who says, why don't you listen to the tape, unless you speak Arabic, what are you going to get from it?
The president?
Really. The president has spoken to our position on this issue. He's spoken very clearly, and that is our position.
In other words, we're doing nothing. Low oil prices, they can do whatever they want. To kill one of their own dissidents, they can do it. Even though he was working for a United States journalism outfit and he was a legal resident here.
Mm-hmm.
And his kids are apparently also. But okay. All right. Well, we know where we stand here. I mean, it's real politics. Yeah, that's the one thing about the Trump administration. They're not going to pretend they're going to do something. Everybody else has pretended that they were going to be okay. They were going to do something with the Saudis, and they never did. At least he's like, no, we're not doing anything with the Saudis. And they can kill whoever they want. They're our friends. But what does it say to Vladimir Putin? I would just ask you this. You know what? I want to tie these two things together here. Because, you know, there's all this question about Manafort deciding he doesn't want to he's not going to go along with his plea deal anymore. He lied on his plea deal. Why was he lying? Just think about this. The big stuff that Manafort has to answer questions from Mueller for are about his work with Russia mm-hmm. as it pertains to the Ukraine and the money he took from the pro-Russian Ukrainian government. That's what it was all about. And what Manafort does not want is to have to answer those questions truthfully so that he or members of his family get poisoned by Vladimir Putin, because that's what Putin has done in England and other parts of Europe, including in Ukraine, to dissidents there.
So he's sort of caught either way.
Right. So you know he's going to die one way or the other. He's going to die in prison or Putin's going to kill him. And why does he think that? Because he knows that because if Putin did that on American soil, I don't think that this administration would do anything about it either. It just is what it is. Or if they grabbed an American off this soil and they did it to him. Did somewhere else. And I think that's the danger of the door that has been opened here with the Saudis. When is somebody going to tell those guys that they have no clothes?
Mm-hmm.
That they are just wearing gigantic robes? They have no clothes underneath them. All right, let's check in now at...
Number four.
James Comey mocked Matt Whitaker's intelligence on Tuesday when asked if the now acting attorney general will try to end the Mueller investigation. This is an interview in Boston where Comey said he doubts Whitaker will try to rein in Mueller because he knows there would be legal and political ramifications.
Do you have a sense about whether he should be serving as acting attorney general? Many people have questioned even the legality of it.
I think there's a serious legal question. I don't know the answer. I'm glad to see it's going to be adjudicated in the courts. I think there's a more serious question, and that is he having the career ethics officials at the Department of Justice examine his past and then offer him a written opinion as to whether he should be involved in things like the Mueller investigation? I sure hope he is, because that's the only way to be a responsible leader of that institution, but I don't know that to be the case.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
But then?
To what extent do you think he can derail the special investigation?
I think it's a worry, but to my mind, not a serious worry. The institution is too strong, and he, frankly, is not strong enough to have that kind of impact. And look, he may not be the sharpest knife in our drawer, but he can see his future and knows that if he acted in an extra legal way, he would go down in history for the wrong reasons. And I'm sure he doesn't want that.
How do you think he's not strong enough to do that?
Well, I just don't think he has the throw weight, both by virtue of his experience, his intellect, and his time in seat, to be able to shape the institution in that way.
Seemed like a Comey burn baked into that answer. Did everybody hear that?
Sick burn! Sick burn! Sick. All right. Yeah.
Not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yeah. Right. Hmm. Yeah. The point is,
acting attorney general.
The point is that Comey, because, you know, he was the FBI director, he understands the Justice Department very well. He does understand, then he was a deputy attorney general at one point. He gets that there would be such an amount of revolt at the top levels of the Justice Department that they would be running to Congress. People would be resigning, running to Congress, testifying. It would just, it would create a political nightmare. Mm-hmm. There.
No question. It would blow up.
All right. Let's check your 3, 2, and 1. But first, Judy, what's going on in the newsroom at the bottom of the hour?
Another cold-related death in the Chicago area. And there's this. Hey, Bears fans, enter for your chance to win 2 spots on the all-inclusive Bears fan trip to Cancun. ChicagoTribune.com/monster giveaway, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune.
There you go. All right. Top five continues.
Number 3.
Michael B. Jordan, not to be confused with Michael Jordan,
nope,
is reprising his role as Adonis Creed in Creed 2. He becomes a first-time father. He says he worked to channel what it's like to be a first-time dad.
Of course, you know, here and there, you're with this, you know, this infant, this little baby and stuff like that. And I love kids, you know, so you definitely get into that mind state of being a young father, a young dad. All the, what would the insecurities be? What would the worries, you know, like what would Adonis be going through in that moment? So I definitely, felt that.
Aww.
He says people love
right.
This movie, man.
I know.
Richard Roper gave it 3 stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Sylvester Stallone, isn't it?
Yes. Man, people mm-hmm. love that movie. Checking in at
number 2.
Stephen A. Smith is familiar with going viral over his feelings on marijuana.
Weed. You come on that, and then you come on TV, and you come on national TV. Oh, Stephen A., you gotta look out. Look out for what? Weed? Weed? Really? Stay off the weed.
Thanks, Stephen A.
So, today, someone asked him, because, you know, it's been legalized now in all these states,
mm-hmm.
how he feels about the devil's lettuce.
Yes, I do. Stay off the weed.
Oh.
Well, what about gummies?
How does he feel about gummies, I wonder?
He sounds like he's on the weed when he does that, though, doesn't he?
He could be a PSA for the weed right there with that pronunciation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something.
He's always shouting that, Stephen A.
He is. That's why we love him.
It's true.
Number 1.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
The creator of SpongeBob himself, the Nickelodeon megahit Steven Hillenburg, has died. The cause of death is ALS, which Hillenburg revealed he had been diagnosed with in March of last year. He began his animation career in 1987, pursuing a degree in experimental animation at California Institute of the Arts in Valencia. Earned his master's in arts in 1992. He joined Nickelodeon in the mid-90s. SpongeBob would eventually become one of the biggest hits on television. 2 movies were spun, a Broadway show, and a merchandising empire.
Pull your pants up, Patrick. We're going home.
But you can't go home. Lindy!
Lindy?
How much did you hear?
I heard enough.
Did you see my underwear?
No, Patrick.
Did you want to?
Hillenburg explains how he came up with the character.
Obviously, SpongeBob is a comedy, but it really was inspired by me liking marine science. One day, this guy, Martin Olson, who is a writer on the show, he comes into my office and he sees this comic book that I created when I worked at the Marine Institute. It started me thinking, if I'm going to do a show, I would do it about these invertebrates and these crazy animals that exist in the ocean. It was that moment where I said, maybe I should pursue this, you know, go down this path.
The great Stephen Hillenburg was 57 years old.
The top 5 at 5.
Judy Pollack's News being brought to you by AppleChevy.com.